And welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation, anime, cartoon thing, podcast. It's not a thing, it's a podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Tucky, and we're doing a slightly different show than normal. How are you, Tucky?
I'm all right. I'm sure it's a podcast. Last time I checked.
It was. The last time we checked, it was. But we're not sure. We'll soldier on because that's what we do. As I said, how are you, Tucky?
I'm all right. I've had a few suspicious, like, fuel drinks recently, so I'm a bit wired at the moment.
You're a bit wired?
Yeah. When they say, like, taste the rainbow, I can actually taste the rainbow.
Are you the giraffe in that advert?
No, it's the moisture I can taste. Everything tastes like condensation at the moment.
You have seen that advert, though, the Skittles advert with the giraffe eating the rainbow and the guy milking the giraffe. Yeah. Because people think I've made that up. People actually think I've made that advert up. Like I had some weird fevered cheese dream or something like that.
Everybody thinks things like that. You say like a giraffe, like, because I had this thing on BBC Two. It was like an independent comedy thing called Zed for Fake, where a cartoon character kidnaps you on a double-decker bus, and then you've got to guess if something's real or fake or something like that. And I was telling people about it for ages. I'm like, Zed for Fake, it's really a thing. And they're like, no, you just made it up. And I still haven't found footage to prove that I'm right.
Yeah.
I just know there'll be like an independent filmmaker out there laughing, knowing that it's like, it's torment for you.
Yeah. I spent years trying to remember this name of this strange comedy series that I'd watched for a while. And I couldn't remember it. And I kept describing it to people because it was very surreal and very strange and nobody would watch it. And finally, after I spoke to Graham from Cinema Eclectica, he went, oh, that's Attention Scum. I went, that's it. Someone else has watched it.
Finally, you're lucky to have friends who know these things.
Yeah, I was vindicated after 10 years of people calling me mad. So anyway, we're not a TV comedy sketch show or anything like that. We are talking about anime and animation. We're going to be talking a lot about anime today. But something a little bit different to get us started. We actually received a couple of things. We do books as well on one of our podcasts called Literary Loitering. Or I say we do books. We kind of do books. Kind of. I'm still trying to work out how to describe what Literary Loitering actually is.
It's the Mad Hatter's librarian.
See, I like to think it's the ransom note that's given to the arts world for no reason other than we like to cut out letters from newspapers and stick them on paper. We haven't actually kidnapped anyone. We just like doing that and sending people messages.
We like all the different fonts, so give them all prominence.
Exactly. Or you know that sculpture of the boy taking a waz into the pool?
Oh, the cherub.
Yeah, the cherub.
Cherub, I believe it's called.
We're kind of like that of the arts world. That's literary loitering. We do books, though, as well. Sometimes we get books in that actually don't quite fit into literary loitering. They fit into other shows. And one of them we received from Arrow Books. And Arrow normally do movies. Arrow Video, Arrow Cinema, that sort of thing. But they do books and music as well. And one of the books we got was a book about Ghosts in the Shell by Andrew Osmond. And I've had a read of this. Now, this is out now. And this is actually a look at the production, the design, the people involved of the original 1995 movie. What influenced the 95 movie and the impact the 95 movie had on movies that came after and on filmmakers that came after, like the Wachowskis and others.
So this is like a behind-the-scenes book of the original Ghost in the Shell.
Yes, and it's actually really interesting. There's stuff in here that I honestly didn't know. And I thought I knew a lot about the original Ghost in the Shell movie, but it talks about Mamoru Oshii and how Ghost in the Shell is more his work now than it is Masamune Shirow's, because Masamune Shirow's manga, the main story elements are there, but a lot of Shirow's comedic aspects have been removed for the film. So the film is a lot more serious than the manga is.
What about, like, design aspects? Was there any, like, creative changes in that aspect of the movie?
There were, because a lot of people... This is the thing. It talks about the controversy with... What's-her-face? Scarlett Johansson playing the role of the Major in the live-action version, yeah? Right. He's saying it's a Japanese property. It's set in Japan. You should have a Japanese person. But it's not actually set in Japan. The original movie isn't set in Japan.
It's not.
No. The original movie, and what it's kind of a dead giveaway, which even I didn't notice until you look at it on closer inspection. The original movie is set in something that's more similar to Hong Kong, because the signs...
It's definitely got the...
A lot of the signs are in Chinese.
The Blade Runner kind of failed at what, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it owes a lot to Blade Runner in terms of how they actually made the city, but there's various aspects of the city in the original Ghost in the Shell movie that are very Hong Kong. You know, they remind me, now that I've gone back and looked over, because I read this book and then I went back and watched the 95 movie, I was like, my God, how did I not notice this? Do you see? Because there's certain scenes that remind me of areas like Kowloon and places like that, and you're like, I didn't notice this at all. It just went completely off my head for like 20 years.
That's the thing. Some people don't look at it. I mean, the whole controversy about her not being Japanese. I think everybody likes to complain about race now. It's such a petty argument. And that's not to say that racism isn't a serious issue in society today. I'm just saying that if you're going to criticize the casting based on a frivolous point, you know, it's when they did the whole Full Metal Alchemist, the new live action Full Metal Alchemist is coming out. And the people are complaining that it's a full Japanese cast because it's set in, like, parts of Europe and whatnot.
Yeah. So you can't win either way. You can't win these days. Someone's going to complain about something. And at the end of the day, my old boss used to say, if you're not pissing someone off, you're not doing your job right.
What was he the boss of anyway?
This was actually in customer services, right? His take on customer services was, if you're not pissing someone off, then you're not doing your job right. Because at the end of the day, from his perspective, customer services was not so much about making sure the customer was always happy, but that the customer had what they needed, and that was it, end of story. They didn't need anything else.
Fair point.
Which means that someone's going to be unhappy, in most cases the customer, because they have no leg to stand on when they complain.
It's especially like frivolous stuff as well.
Yeah.
But that's mostly of...
But anyway, leaving that to one side. On with the rest of the show. This is a fascinating book, I'll be honest. It is very, very, very easy to read. It's very short, so you can read it literally in one sitting. And it's only, 120 pages long? So that's nothing. And the nice thing about it is, after you've read this, you will want to go back and watch the original movie. With the knowledge that you have from this book, you'll go back and watch the original movie and you'll basically notice the things that the book's talking about, things that you didn't think were there, things that you overlooked. So credit to Andrew Osmond. He's done his research and he's compiled things in a really handy, easy to read form. And the book is quite small. It'll fit in your bag and you can read it on the train, something like that. So it's very, very handy. I would say if you're a fan of Ghost in the Shell, then absolutely get this book.
That's what you don't really see, like, much of the behind the scenes of what goes on in the anime industry, especially from like a Western point of view, because to us it's just like, oh, it's there, it's on Crunchyroll, and that's it. Sometimes you'll hear, like, if something bad happens, you'll hear about it, but you don't usually hear about like just the normal cogs that are working behind the scenes. But luckily, and an amazing segue into what I'm going to talk about, it's we sometimes get a glimpse into it. And the AJA have released their anime industry data report for 2016.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. So basically, the AJA is it's a group of anime fans, industry professionals, government members who get together and they look at the anime industry as a whole, from Japan to overseas, and they basically give their educated estimates on how the Japanese animation market is and looking at trends and sales and whatnot. And you get like this whole wave of data. For the casual anime fan, it's just numbers and money to them, and it won't really be interesting. But to fans like us, I think it's quite interesting to see the trends, just as to where the anime industry is going at the moment, where it's been, and what's coming around the corner, really, and we can sit here and speculate to it.
All right, excellent. So hit me with your first bullet point, then.
Right, got them here. So obviously the industry is now at a record high since their records back in 2002 began. Overseas, it makes about 34.9 billion yen, which is about 233 million.
So it's a lot of money. It's got some legs overseas.
Oh, it definitely has. Overseas, you're looking at your name. It's banked so far £109.7 million.
Wow.
And I don't know if that's like including their domestic sales as well, which I'm assuming it's just overall sales for all.
It probably is.
And the report goes into look at and says, it's now saying that we are or could be in the fourth great anime boom. That's what they're calling it.
The fourth great anime boom? Okay, what were the other three? Because I only know of two.
Well, there have been the original anime boom.
The one that propagated anime, yeah.
Then you've got, mid-80s. Then about a decade ago, the 2005, 2006. And obviously now will be the fourth. It's quite close together considering how old anime is. A medium.
I was going to say, because the late 80s one carried all the way through most of the 90s. Most of what we regard as 90s anime, the boom started off in the late 80s. I think it was around 87, 88 it started.
That's when we started getting all of the Studio Ghibli movies, and it became a little bit more acceptable.
Actually,
I mean, Jonathan Ross had that documentary in 1994 about it, so it was popular then.
Yeah, it was an interesting bit in that Ghost in the Shell book where it was talking about the relationship with Manga Entertainment at the time, because Manga Entertainment were getting slated because they'd released Legend of the Overfiend, and so they'd been tarred with this very nasty brush of tentacles and sex and stuff like that.
Yeah, all about the tentacles.
Yeah, well... I think Manga Entertainment were the ones ultimately who were responsible for introducing the West to the term tentacle rape.
They were, and that's the time when they brought out Akira and everybody. The thing is, everyone was apprehensive in the 90s about anime. It was either it's really childish Japanese cartoons, or it's like the extreme of like the hentai, bestiality, tentacle monstery ones.
That all came because of Legend of the Overfiend, though. Before that, because before Overfiend, you had Akira and a few other things, and there was the Ghibli movies that had come out as well. Oh, sorry, Ghibli movies.
Ghibli.
Yeah, Ghibli.
But they got overshadowed by the negative press that the rest got, and that's one of the things that kind of disappoints us about like history, is that all the Ghibli movies got overlooked. Because it's like, oh, it's all tentacles and schoolgirls being raped, and we're British and we don't go for that sort of thing.
The thing that's very sad in terms of the press coverage is the fact that times have not moved on. I mean, we were talking about The Night Is Short, Walk On Girl, and some of the reviews we've seen from the mainstream press really didn't understand that movie at all.
This is the thing, they have the agenda of hate to push, though, because that's the thing that makes things viral in this day and age, hate. And the one that I read, I think it was in the Telegraph, when the guy had his second name was Art or something like that. So it's like, oh, you're perfectly placed for reviewing things.
Yeah.
But he's like, oh, well, the guy's clearly a stalker, and it's normalizing like stalking behavior. And it's like, no, mate, you missed the point completely.
If it's supposed to be normalizing stalking behavior, then you might have an argument there if it was a live action movie. But it's not. It's clearly a cartoon. It's nothing else but a cartoon. I mean, that's like saying, oh, Tom and Jerry normalizes violence against animals.
Yeah. And I mean, some of the violence in Tom and Jerry is brutal as out.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking back, there's this one where Thomas gets a pill cue jammed right up his tail. Like up his tail, I can't do the scream and that, but it's painful as out.
Yeah.
I would love to be in the sound room when they recorded Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Just the screams of pain that you had to do.
And I'm sorry, poor Wiley Coyote, the things that he has to go through.
Yeah. But like I'm saying, it's the negative press that we've seen through the times, and it hasn't changed as much, but there's now a community and there's an understanding, and the community's growing. And it's not just like here in the UK, but across the world. America's already kind of accepted it, because America accepts pretty much anything that'll escape from reality.
not full. Well, yeah, I was going to say, as soon as you said escape from reality, I was like, oh, right, yeah.
they've got their fantasies. The American dream is actually a dream in itself.
Well, they know that. They know that, and the proof of that is the fact of who they got as president.
They can't win an argument anymore. No American anywhere can win an argument.
No,
even if they're on the right side.
I actually have a theory that America is going for the Dallas ending. The ending I'm talking about where she wakes up and it was all just a dream.
Yeah, they did that in Highlands as well. It's all just the dream of a supermarket checkout girl.
Yeah, I reckon that's what they're doing. I reckon the entirety of America is going to wake up one day and everything's going to be fine.
It's all right. They're still part of the British colonies.
Exactly. My God, some of them probably wish they were.
Yeah, I think Lizzie's taking on conscriptions.
But anyway, hit me with another bullet of whatever it is.
So they're now seeing a shift in the traditional kids' animes, or as they've labelled it as, like, more daytime animes, and there is now a more prominent place for nighttime animes. So gone are the days of Pokemon, Digimon, Yo-Kai Watch. More are Tokyo Ghoul, Death Note, and that kind of ilk, like with a more darker setting and kind of a horror.
I think
horror and drama animes.
I think
starting to take more prominence.
Yeah, I think I actually understand why that's happening. One of the reasons for that ultimately is going to be Attack on Titan.
And the viewers are grown up.
Well, the viewers
the ones
are grown
the
up,
kids
but,
who got in at Pokemon are
yeah, but
they're
the
all grown up. So.
They have, but I think Attack on Titan has probably played a more prominent part in that transition than anybody actually realizes. People have grown up, that's fine, but that's been happening throughout the entirety of the anime industry, and not much really changed over 20, 30 years.
Yeah,
but the only thing that's really shaken the industry kind of at its foundations has been the explosion of Attack on Titan, more so than any other anime of the last 15 years.
And there are similar shows that we're starting to see now getting greenlit.
Yeah.
The whole horror, like, body shock kind of thing as well.
Well, yeah, it's kind of horror body shock, but there's also that adventure, that kind of martial theme to things as well. You know, Kingdom has really started coming into its own, for example, in terms of the manga, and they did the anime series. I can't remember. Is the anime series still going on?
It should be. The thing is, it's one of the most read.
Yeah.
And in-stream, like, coverage of it, which is, it's quite surprising, because Kingdom is, it's up there.
Yeah.
It's one of the, like, top five constantly read manga.
Yeah. And the other thing I think that is pushing it, and this is something that probably isn't covered in this report, is the rise of Chinese and Korean animation.
Yeah, well, one of the increases in revenue is because of the Chinese market, and they've touched on the fact that there's a change undergoing at the moment with the politics of China. There's a lot of tension.
Yeah,
in Asia at the moment, and there are some saying that China, with them controlling the internet and controlling what the citizens see, they're going to stop trading with Japan. Licenses will go down, streaming will stop of anime, and China will want to control that. The government itself would want to control that, and that's one of the great risks to this whole fourth great anime boom. It's hugely dependent on what China does and how the whole political landscape there. I mean, North Korea plays a part in it as well.
Yeah. And this,
like,
again,
the whole hot pot.
This again, though, comes back to what I said before about the anime industry, right? It's too insular, far too insular. The anime industry is a global entertainment medium. And instead of focusing on the rest of the world, they're focused so closely on their home environment and the environments that are around their home environment, because they're easy markets to access. And this is the thing, you need to think much more long-term than that. And maybe they were trying to lay foundations, but you don't need to lay foundations for 20 years. You start shooting stuff out there that will attract the audiences in. You know, get
well, we are seeing the overall growth in overseas.
Yeah.
And another one, bringing on to another one of the points I've got here, is that live entertainment is gaining steam.
Yes.
So the likes of anime concerts, musicals, live stage shows, anime themed cafes, museums, and conventions like us at SonicCon. They're seeing growth year on year.
Is that overseas or in Japan?
No, that's overseas.
All right. Okay.
And they've done like an average growth. They haven't asked us for any figures, so I don't know if this is like true for everywhere else, then we're doing pretty bad. But
they're probably looking at America with these sorts of things.
The American convention scene, but here in the UK, we're at a point of like oversaturation. But across the board, there's 168.4% growth year on year of these like type of events. And like I say, that doesn't mean that like, you know, your local anime conventions or Comic Cons are doing well. It just means that across the globe, it's doing all right. But here in the UK, like I say, we are at a point of oversaturation with events. And these figures don't include things like merchandise and whatnot. That's all. This is just like from entry to the event.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing more attendees and our attendance figures are going up. However, revenues are stagnating because more people are buying day tickets, we're seeing now.
Yeah. More people are buying the full weekend. Yeah. More people buy day tickets because one of the criticisms I have for a lot of the UK conventions is that one day is pretty much the same as the next day. For a lot of the event, the panels might be different, the entertainments might be different, but a lot of the main area of the convention, the traders, everything like that. And that's what a lot of people go for, unfortunately. That is literally what they go for. They go for the traders and the artists and people like that. And once they've seen them, that's basically it for them.
You just have to look at MCMs for that.
Exactly.
And I mean, it's the same carpet, it's the same trainers, it's just a different city, and it's the same thing. And I mean, that's from personal experience. Other people go with friends, and it's like, oh, well, it's a completely different experience with friends. But for me, it's that, and that's why we try to make Sunny a bit different. Well, there's other extenuating circumstances especially in the United Kingdom, because we have Brexit, the pound has got weaker. We have to fork out thousands more on flights and guests. Anime vendors, they have to bring in merchandise at a much higher price.
Anyway, back to the anime.
moving on to another one. As we've touched on Keyframe, the theatrical releases and cinematic releases.
Yeah, 2017 was a very good year, but 2016 was kind of a building year. There wasn't as much out month on month, but there were things that did come out in 2016.
Yeah, and it's like they say, Yonium is dominating the whole coverage of the theatrical releases. They're saying that there's this post Ghibli era, what they call them, the post Ghibli era, because it used to be Studio Ghibli movies were the theatrical releases that the whole industry focused on about anime. And now that Miyazaki kind of retired but hasn't retired officially, they're starting to look at the next generation, and then Makoto Shinkai has came out with Yonium, and they're saying that that is the silencer for critics. That anime, because apparently it's like, it was, oh, anime is going to die now because, you know, there's no more Ghibli movies coming out, so no one's got any heartwarming like movies to watch. But then they've brought out Yonium, and with that being such a global success, the whole industry shone a spotlight on it.
I have watched Yonium, and we will talk about that on the next show, so I'll go into more detail. But I wouldn't say it was the most heartwarming.
Well, it's not. It's got a good plot.
Yeah.
It's well drawn. And there's some great musical accompaniments on it. But
it's got Makoto Shinkai's typical, you know, he does those panoramic vista shots, those nice panoramic shots.
Michael Beer with a lens flare.
No, that's J.J. Abrams with the lens flare.
Is it?
Yeah, J.J. Abrams is all about the lens flare. Makoto Shinkai often does those wide shots where you, like in 5 centimeters per second, when you see the planet rising up over the horizon in Children.
It's like you, every time you watch one of their movies, it's like standing atop a hill and you can see.
Yeah, Children Who Chase like the whole Voices, you had like that wide panoramic shot of the desert area and stuff like that. He does it in like every single one of his movies. And but I wouldn't have said that was the most feel-good movie. In This Corner of the World is a very good movie.
There's lots of them. I can't wait to see next year's report just to see, because we've seen everything from the Sword Art Online ordinal scale movie. They've got the Pokemon 20th or 30th anniversary. 20th, isn't it? 20th anniversary, I Choose You.
I was going to say, I don't care.
Well, that's coming out, and we've seen a lot more like coming out of theatres, especially like in the UK. I'm not too keen on the prices they charge, especially when it's been like re-releases of DVDs. You go get an HMV for a fiver.
That's the thing that annoys me about the release in the UK is that the price is extortionate. I wouldn't even use the word exorbitant. I'd use the word extortionate.
I mean, Perfect Blue's coming out at the end of the month. This is like Anime Unlimited's like release thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that they're releasing them on the big screen, but when I saw, I think it was Akira, they did a re-release of Akira in theaters for one night only, and I went to check tickets, and tickets were like £14-15. And it's like, well, I bought it on DVD for £2 at HMV like 8 years ago.
Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, I have to wonder, even though I don't like how much they're charging, I have to wonder how much choice they have in charging that amount, you see.
Well, that's the thing. We need to know the ins and outs of what each individual cinema or cinematic chain charges for the screenings themselves.
Exactly. And, not only that, there's the cost of actually showing it at the theatre, because you need a license for that. You know, yeah. The license.
I know there's one place where you can get licenses for X amount, because it's like a brokerage kind of thing. Mm. But it's a complex thing, and unless you're like inside on the industry, then I don't think I've got like the experience to like comment on that kind of side of it. Yeah. But going back to the report, the overall revenue that's generated from theatrical releases in 2015, only like 2001 and 2013 have like surpassed it. So it's still quite high, but it's not as high as I would have expected. Especially when you think that it includes their local market, so they've got like the One Piece movies that come out now and then.
But the thing is, you've got to think how much of that is because of fluctuation in the value of money in different regions. Don't forget, we had the Brexit vote last year, didn't we?
Yeah.
And because we had the Brexit vote last year, the pound went down. So that affects us greatly. And how many of those situations happened around the world and even in Japan?
Oh, quite a few. Japan's been in turmoil for quite a while now. I think they're going for another election now at the moment, because Shinzo Abe has turned around and said, like, oh, well, I'll hold another election. They've got the Tokyo Olympics that's coming up.
They had the election. Shinzo Abe won.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, they had the election the other day, didn't they?
That cameo was the Mario hat that done it for him, if you ask me.
No, that's the Nintendo fan talk. That's the Nintendo fan talking. I think it's just basically he's a popular leader.
Well, the emperor wants to stop being the emperor, which is causing quite a stir.
I'll be the emperor then.
It's
I'll take the job.
Things like that.
I'll take the hit. You know, I don't mind.
Don't worry, lad. I've got the chrysanthemum throne under control. Leave it to me, lads.
Yeah, it's all right. I know how to look after chrysanthemums. I'm a gardener.
Well, it's little things like that. Like I say, obviously, like the overall revenue, and this is their best estimates. I mean, they've got people who pour through thousands of figures and numbers to get to this point, but it's not always 100% accurate. There's some bit margin for error there.
Well, the thing is, they won't have access to all the data for a start, and so best guess is the best they can do.
Yeah, and. I mean, just speaking about like revenues, also in merchandising has actually shrank, and that is mainly because Yo-Kai Watch sucks.
Yeah,
and because they had this whole thing where Yo-Kai Watch was bigger than God itself at one point, and they over merchandised it, and it died a death in 2015. And
lessons to be learned from other shows, right? This is exactly what happened with Ben 10. And if they'd looked at the model, if they'd looked at Ben 10 and saw what happened with Ben 10, they would have said, right, we're not doing that. Because if you think about it, Ben 10 had the potential to run for years, didn't it?
It still is running, actually. They just rebooted it.
They've rebooted it now. But the original series had the chance to run for years, didn't it? With Ben 10 Alien Force. They really pushed all the merchandise for Ben 10. You couldn't move for it. And now, if you say to your kid, do you want some Ben 10 stuff? I go, don't really care.
Yeah. They became numb to it.
Yeah.
And it's the same with Yo-Kai Watch in Japan, especially around the world. When they released it here, I mean, the show is really bad.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anyone's seen the dubs, but there are some glaring voice errors, script errors. And
coming back to the ADR thing, and again, this is one of the reasons why I think sales of DVDs have been affected, because of the dub. Because at the end of the day, if you're paying good money for a DVD or a Blu-ray,
oh, yeah,
you want quality, don't you? And if the dub isn't up to your standards, you're not going to pay for it. Are you listening Funimation?
Especially if it's your kids as well, they'll be disappointed in the end.
Yes. Again, are you listening Funimation? We're trying to give you advice here, you know. We're actually telling you, get your ADR in order. Actually get them to listen to how things are supposed to be pronounced. I'll get them to do an intuitive script. Don't just copy literal things. In other words, be global. Embrace the differences. And don't be so, God bless the US.
So said, quality control, sticking along with that line. There are more anime being made for continuous seasons that have already got series out, over 108 already running series. So like season 2, season 3, season 4s of already running shows. There was 108 of them which got new seasons.
Okay.
And brand new spanking series, 233 got made.
Over the course of the year?
Yeah. And that's
when
kind
you say,
of like...
When you say brand spanking new...
Yeah, like new.
As in, not from adaptations?
No. New series.
No, they weren't adapted from like a manga or a novel or a game.
Oh, no. They were adapted from manga.
All right, okay. So the adaptations are in there.
From a game, I'm assuming.
I'm just checking that when you say new, they're including the adaptations from, you know, manga and video games and books. Because if it was 233 completely original anime, you know, that weren't based on anything previously, I would have said that's one of the greatest years in anime ever.
Yeah, I think you'll have like 8. If that of like proper brand new.
Yeah.
But these have all been made, and I mean our job as reviewers and fans just to keep up. In about 10 years when they release the DVD, Blu-ray, special limited edition, collector's tin, box set, rubbish or what have you, when we've got to review that and get round to reviewing that, you know, we've got like over 300 to choose from 2015.
Hey, at least it won't be like Michael Bay.
But yeah, we say that now. But last time we were treated to this kind of volume was the last great anime bubble in 2005. That fell through because of quality control, because the sheer amount of anime, this was just people throwing money at anything that was pitched at them.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I've got this like short story of like Ero manga. You know, will you let us, why, oh, it's got big titties in, oh, I have some money, can I make it.
And it's because, the thing is, everybody was trying to find the next big thing, because Naruto was raking in money left, right, and centre, Bleach was raking in money left, right, and centre, One Piece became the biggest selling manga of all time, and the anime was doing crazy well, you had a couple of around the peripheries that will probably get remakes, I reckon. Stuff like... Because Hunter x Hunter has done amazingly well with the remake. And
yeah.
I reckon that Hitman Reborn and Kanjuki no Gashbell and stuff like that, I reckon those will probably get a remake, a complete reboot.
Well, we've already seen like Blue Exorcist got his second season.
Yeah.
And whatnot from kind of that era, but... With that, it's the same, because yeah, it was a bubble and bust time back then, and they made that much and the quality control like left it, and fans became disconnected because all we got left with was a bunch of fan service tripe.
Yeah, again,
and some of the good stuff that really stood out, but the rest of the good stuff that couldn't stand out because it couldn't promote itself.
Yeah,
it just got washed away with the rest of it.
Again, though, that's what leads us on to Attack on Titan. And why Attack on Titan was just like this, it was just like this comet hitting the ground, you know, with explosions and fireworks everywhere, because it was so very different to what everybody had become used to, kind of become desensitized to over the last decade.
And everyone's trying the same thing again, though. It seems like history is repeating itself.
History will always repeat itself with stuff like this. I mean, as soon as Attack on Titan finished, you know, the first series finished, what did they come up with? Cabin Area of the Iron Fortress? And I'm looking at that, I'm going, Attack on Titan with lava zombies.
Yeah. Or when Sword Art Online made it bigger, now there's always all these new MMO kind of games. I mean, Recovery of an MMO Addict out now, this season. I mean, it's obviously not like a death game in a computer, but it's based around MMO and adventure and dungeons and whatnot, and that's making a comeback.
Sword Art Online, it's like what we discussed this before the show. Your first impression of King's Game was superb.
Yeah.
Whereas my reaction to that was a lot more lukewarm, if you remember. My reaction was, another death game set in a high school. It was literally that.
I honestly thought it would have stood out, but I've got to the third episode and I just do not care anymore.
Yeah.
I've never went off something so fast, but I don't like being disappointed. And I kind of feel disappointed in myself for getting hyped about something and then...
You got hyped about it for good reason. You know, you had the first episode. Obviously, they did a great job with the first episode, and that's what they're supposed to do with the first episode in order to capture your attention. It's just the episodes that came after didn't live up to your standards, didn't live up to the first episode, so you were ultimately disappointed. You know?
Yeah.
That's literally all it is. It's nobody's fault. I mean, I'm still angry about UQ Holder, but I'm not going to go back over that because we talked about that before.
Well, I mean, I've looked, I've pretty much touched on everything, but it's interesting to see back in, like, they started making these records in 2002, and when it got really bad, like in 2008 for the industry, they started looking at using pachinko machines and gambling to generate income for the anime industry.
Instead of actually focusing on growing the industry. The only way to ride out a storm, right, is to head straight into it.
Well, they've, let's say 2008, banking crisis happened and whatnot, and they've relied on, well, what people usually go to is like a failsafe. It's like gambling and fleecing the people who are stupid enough to gamble, really.
Yeah.
But they've put anime tie-ins with pachinko machines.
Yeah, they've done that with all sorts. By the way, what I just said, if you're a sailor, that probably isn't correct advice. I was speaking metaphorically.
It's I may as well lose my place now. But it's one of the things that it's contributing a lot now to the industry. It's amazing to see that. Whereas areas can shrink, like whether we're seeing now growth in internet distribution, they've got marked as the pachinko and the like. Well, it's just like gambling.
This is
Live Entertainment didn't even feature until 2013, yeah. So...
This is the thing, though. The thing that puzzles me is the anime industry itself has been resistant to internet distribution for a long time.
Now they've actually managed to, like, wrangle it.
Now they've started embracing it. They're actually seeing more growth, and the reason why is because it's a lot more accessible. It literally is as simple as that. But I think that what they need to do, if these tie-ins with companies like Amazon and Netflix and various other bigwigs, companies that are a lot bigger than Funimation,
yeah,
once those really start taking off, we'll actually discover that the anime industry explodes. I reckon that next year, 2018, is going to be a massive year for anime, probably the biggest it's ever had, and the reason for that is distribution. And
well, it is going that way.
It is going that way. But the thing is, now what they need is the content to match the scope. They'll have a much bigger reach. The anime industry will have a much bigger reach in 2018. But do they have the content to match that? Yes, they do. And if that means bringing back old shows and rebooting them, which means I might actually get the complete version of Negima, you know, instead of UQ Holder, maybe finish off Negima properly as an anime, please.
Just a suggestion.
Maybe finish off, Kanjiki no Gash Bell as an anime properly. Maybe remake Hitman Reborn and finish that off as an anime series. There are options, and they would run for ages.
Well, so far, as it is for 2016, this is their like kind of summary. It's the Japanese industry expands continuously, recording positive growth for six consecutive years, and its highest revenue for three consecutive years.
Excellent.
So, I mean, but it's not all. Hard video sales have knocked down about 10%. Merchandising's down 12% on sales. TV's down about 3%. And the pachinko machines are actually down about 1.3%. But movies,
yeah,
they're at 112%. Music,
yeah,
something we're rarely talking about. Music's actually up 108%.
It's because, again, distribution, because of things like Spotify and because of YouTube itself, more people are getting into Japanese music, and some of that music just happens to be from the opening sequences and closing sequences of anime. Yep.
And that goes along with internet distributions up 107.1%.
Yeah.
But the big areas of growth at the moment are the live entertainment, the likes of conventions, anime cafes, you know, in real life stuff.
Yeah.
That's up 168.4%. And the biggest growth in the whole industry is overseas.
Yeah.
178.7% up in sales, and that is mainly at the risk of China as well.
Yeah.
So next year that could all fall to crap. But it's good to see that overseas is actually having an important part in the industry.
Thing is, I honestly doubt that the industry is going to suffer a major blow if China changes its policy. And I don't think China will change its policy. And the reason I say that is because of the rise of Chinese animation. Chinese animation is starting to take its place in the world alongside anime. And in some cases, Chinese animation is just as good as anime. You know?
If not better in some cases.
If not better in some cases. And there are a lot of stories that are being, you know, there are a lot of web novels and Chinese comics that are being turned into animated series. The King's Avatar, for example, various others. Tales of Demons and Gods got a weird CG animated series, which ran for like 40 episodes or something like that. And that'll probably get a second season. But that's got a webcomic as well, and it's a novel series. And those sorts of things are pushing the Chinese animation industry, the Chinese entertainment industry, and those sorts of things are highly marketable to the rest of the world. In fact, they have big followings in places like Japan and Korea and in the West. And so I don't think China is going to close its doors to anime, because if it does, then other countries will close their doors to Chinese media exports. So it's
that's the thing.
Street.
I mean, the amount of licenses that next to the USA, they are the biggest.
Yeah,
like
the
licenses.
Thing is, it's a two-way street. It's a two-way street. That's all it is. It's give and take, and that's how business works. Ah,
I pretty much covered everything there. Then, yeah. But if you want to have a look at it, go on to the AGA. Just type into Google AGA Anime Industry Report. It's got a little PDF. It's only like about 6-7 pages. And it's got like all the details, the statistics, right down to a map of like studios, where they are, and who runs them, and how much they make, and all that jazz is on there.
Excellent. Right, that's about us for this week. We'll be back next week with our normal programming, which will include lots of cartoons and anime and other forms of animation, and probably might not be as number heavy as today. Tucky and I found today quite fascinating, but normal anime fans will forgive you if you fell asleep. Don't worry.
That's all right. But it's good to see, like, what, you know, because it affects everything. It's like a whole ecosystem that goes on. Without the numbers and figures, you wouldn't get the fan service. So
exactly. If you want the fan service, you got to stay for the maths. And on that note, like
that'll keep kids in school.
The maths.
You want to see Keijo? You want to see Keijo? You're going to tell us how much in industrial shipping they charge.
Is that called math service? Is it? anyway, we are at the end of the show. Keyframe is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. All our shows are available on Apple Podcasts and Audio Boom and various other places on the internet. So if you are listening through any service like that, then subscribe. It'll keep you up to date with the network, because we do have other shows like Cinema Eclectica, which I mentioned before. It is a great movie show, and we also do The Geek Show itself, which is it's taken some strange twists and turns over the years, but we're liking this final form. And yeah, if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or email us studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. We have a Patreon. If you're a regular listener, then show your support. And that's about it. So until next time, I've been Rob.
And I've been Tucky.
And we'll see you all later.
Bye. Phil's way without Mark here. He should just, because I know he's editing this episode, so just hopefully he'll edit himself saying, I'm here, you guys.
I'm here, you guys. Right here.